Paper Girls is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. I'm Jess Sterling, one of your Paper Girls, delivering you the hottest recap of the show Paper Girls around. And guess what, Deidre Lipsicus? It was never about the corn.
It was never about the corn, but it was always about the corniness. Hello, Jess. How are you doing?
I'm so jazzed. I'm so excited to talk about this episode. This show, I feel like, is getting better and better as it goes on. I don't know that this episode was my favorite of the first four, but I do think it contains my favorite moment from the first four episodes.
Absolutely. Yes, I would co-sign all of that.
The soundtrack is bopping. We got Schools Out for Summer this episode, which if you know me, you know this song is up my alley and a half. It is like spot on, something I love. So
it was perfect. We have Schools Out for Summer. We have Jason Mantzoukas. We have bongos and we have corn and chilies.
What's not to love? There's so much. And there's a reference to Alf.
Like, yes. This episode has everything.
Yes. I'm so excited to get into it. And I'm very excited because this is the first episode that we are recording, like, since everything has dropped. And so now we're getting to see other people get into the show and get to see their excitement about episodes.
We get to be jealous of them being able to watch ahead.
I know. That is so true. I'm getting really jealous watching people just like binge through it, because I'm like, but I wanna binge too.
I know, I'd like desperately want to watch the next episode, but lucky for us, me and you, Jess, we are recording three episodes in the next 4 days, so
yes,
we will get to watch a lot of this season and the next episodes over the next few.
Yeah, we'll get a little mini binge going of our own. And you know what? We sacrifice for you listeners, you dear listeners. We sacrifice for you so that you don't have to, you can binge to your heart.
You can binge and then you can re-listen to the story via us.
Exactly.
It's great being it's great being a binge show listener, because you don't have to worry about skipping time as the episodes pass by. You can just go with them, pass them by, and wait for the recaps. It's just as fun.
Yes. So of course we're coming at you from our own little feed here. So if you haven't already and you want to subscribe, please do so. postyourrecaps.com/paper/girls-feed is where you can find us. Of course, you could probably also
hyphens
just
now.
Yeah, a lot of Oh yeah, hyphens. I'm sorry. Dashes and hyphens the same thing?
I think they're in the same family, but I just didn't want people to get confused with the slash and dash.
Okay. So yeah, hyphen, a lot of hyphens in there. So paper-girls-feed. If you want to follow along, of course, if you leave us a little review, we'll love you forever.
We will. It's true. We will love you forever. Do you want to buy our love with a review? I think it's worth it. Small price to pay.
And of course, if you want to chat with us about the show, you could do so in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. You can get in at any level. But of course, if you want the extended version, you can get in at the $10 level, postyourrecaps.com/Patreon.
No hyphens.
No hyphens in there. Very easy. No hyphens. But let's dive into this episode, Deidre, because there's so much that happens. And I do think I'm really enjoying the pacing of this show. I haven't felt bored. I haven't felt bogged down like we are staying in one place for too long. But I also haven't felt rushed. I think the pace is really, really good on this.
Yes.
So let's dive on in. Tell me about It Was Never About the Corn.
So we dive on in, and young Erin and Missy, who we see for the first time, are using a cootie catcher. I know. They're basically
my heart sword.
I know. They're basically doing MASH, but with a cootie catcher. And I was very confused at first because I was expecting the whole, you know, draw a spiral situation.
Yeah. So I've seen this done. I feel like with cootie catchers, it's usually like a prediction. It's not so much like a here's who you'll marry, here's what you live in. Of course, I played MASH though. Mm-hmm. Like any child of the late 80s, 90s did. And the way we would play when I was a kid is that you could, like, if you are the one writing it down and I am the one whose future is being predicted, I get to choose three of my four options, but you get to choose my fourth. And so you always choose the worst. So, like, very much pulling an Aaron where I would say, like, okay, how many kids do you want? And I'd be like, one, two, or none. And, like, the person writing it down would be like, I'm giving you 1,000 kids.
Amazing. I love that you and your friends were each other's spoilers. That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. And we'd always do the worst possible things, like the color of your car. And we would go on and on. We would make our mashes so long of, like, the type of car, the color of the car, the color of your house, the type of your house, like all of these things. Oh, even your children's names got put in there at one point. But I remember specifically we would do, like, oh, colors of the car. And the person wanting would be like hot pink, blue, red. And the trolley person would be like pukey green.
There's a lot more pukey green color cars than there are pink or purple cars or yellow.
Very true. Yeah. But that's why I like this. This really made my heart sore watching Missy and her Missy and Aaron do this, because especially because Missy ends up getting, like, Alf and 100 kids.
Yeah. Missy wants to marry Batman, but she ends up getting Alf and having 100 Alf babies, as Aaron put it.
Yeah, I would. I don't mind. I think Batman is actually a decent choice to marry because he's very rich, as we know.
He is very rich.
And so even if you and the he has one cool toys.
And he has you would have no in-laws.
No in-laws to worry about. Yeah. So many toys. And he's probably off, like, fighting crime all the time. So you just have, what does he live in? Like, the Bat Lair? What is it called?
Batcave?
Yeah. You'd have that all to yourself.
We are the wrong two people to be talking about Batman. But I'm realizing that yes, now being Batman's wife would be a really good life.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think he's a better choice than a lot of other superheroes, because some heroes aren't rich. They just have talent, which, if you don't actually like your husband, then you kind of want the opposite.
Yeah. And, like, aren't a lot of these superheroes basically being, like, hunted down? Like, yeah. I don't think Batman is being hunted down.
Even if he is, if you don't leave the Batcave, then you're fine. You're good.
Yeah.
You and we all know how to quarantine cave. By now.
You can live in your shack inside the Batcave.
Exactly. So I loved this scene. I thought this was really, really cute.
It was cute. So as we transition out of it, essentially, we learn that it was a memory of Missy's. And we're meeting older grown-up Missy for the first time. And she is at the realtor's office waiting for Aaron, who never shows.
Yeah. And this kind of sets up what we already knew, where Missy and adult Aaron aren't exactly BFFs anymore, despite this very sweet flashback that we get. I mean, this is very realistic, though. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, siblings grow apart. When you're not forced to live in a house together, are you always going to stay in contact? Maybe not.
This show has a lot of very real content about what it's like to grow up. And this was definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So then we switch to the farm. And Larry says that they've had the robot in the silo for 14 years. Mm-hmm. He calls the time capsule that they time traveled on a lifeboat, but this giant robot is a battleship. This thing is like freaking Transformer. I don't love that battleship was like the right terminology.
Yeah, you think he should have called it a Transformer?
I mean, it's not a ship. Like, they do ride it, but it's humanoid.
Yeah, it is a vehicle of sorts, but it's certainly not a ship. I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah, if it's shaped like a human, I don't think it should be called a ship.
Unless it's like you're shipping so-and-so-and-so.
Right, yeah, relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have called it the relationship.
Ooh, I kind of like it.
I mean, we do in this episode later have older Aaron and Larry trying to pretend like they're in a relationship.
I cannot wait to talk about
that. Oh my God, I can't either. But we have so much to get through before we can get there. So Larry says to older Aaron that she's the one that has to drive it because the little device paired to her when it scanned her eyeballs. Mm-hmm. But adult Aaron does not want to take the 12-year-old girls into a war zone because she's a protective mama bear. But also, like, how would adult Aaron get home? So she says, you know, the answer is no, hell no. And I just loved the delivery of that line.
Yeah, I don't disagree with this assessment from her of like, first of all, I don't want to go to 99. And second of all, mm-hmm. the girls don't want to like, they don't want to go to 99 either.
Yeah, 99 would be bad for everybody, but yeah. except for Larry and Heckinaldo.
Not that 99 is not a great year to be dropped off in. Like, things were bopping in the 90s.
I mean, Y2K was about to happen, and exactly. you could basically just tell everybody, calm down.
Yes. Just start playing Taylor Swift's You Need to Calm Down, although they don't know that exists yet, I guess.
Yeah,
Adult Aaron does,
right? So yeah, so the robot is due for a mission to 1999, and Tiffany just says, so drop us off on the way to 1988.
I just love that.
I love the concept that 1988 is on the way back to 1999.
I'm just picturing a highway with like the different years as exit the exits. Signs.
Yes. And like the meme where the car just swerves over into the wrong lane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so Larry doesn't want to abort the mission in 1999 because it's something they've been working for a long time. But Tiffany, her very logical self, makes a very good suggestion of going back to 1988 so that he can save Heckinaldo in the first place. I think it's a good plan. Tiffany's got it all worked out.
Tiffany, as we see throughout this episode, is a genius, and oh, I'm not great. Even that is not an overstatement.
No, we stan wholeheartedly.
And I love, okay, I know this is so nerdy, I don't even care. Tiffany is so relatable because when she is as smart as she is and she shows it to people and they respond with like, wow, this is really good, she's proud of herself.
I'm that bitch.
Yeah, and I'm just like, so relatable. Yes, get your A+ queen, we love you.
I love how confident she is in her intelligence. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And I do think this is a great idea that, like, first of all, we saw how upset Larry was when he found out about Heckinaldo. And so if you have a chance to go save them, then that makes sense to do.
I totally agree. I mean, also, so Tiffany points out they can save Heckinaldo. They can go to 99 on the robot for the mission. And Larry and adult Aaron can take the time capsule lifeboat back to 2019. Bingo bango.
Bingo bango. I will say, another thing that I really love about this show is sometimes time travel shows can be very confusing. And I do think this show is doing a great job at making it as simple as possible for us to understand, despite the fact that time travel is very confusing. I do think they're doing a really good job at like telling us, oh, we can't do this because this and this, and this is what this is used for. Like, it's fairly easy to understand.
Yes. I think they also do a great job of saying the years.
Yes.
All the times that you know where they are, where they're from, where they want to go.
Yeah.
So adult Aaron relents about using the robot, but she says, you know, I will drive, but we're absolutely taking these 12-year-olds all home.
Mm-hmm.
And then KJ says that they have to go find Mac because Mac is still out with Dylan. And Larry tells them that they live in 6 hours for the folding.
Yeah. So they only have 6 hours to figure out a plan. And Larry and older Aaron are not especially worried about finding Mac. They're like, oops, too bad. Like, you know, she's SOL.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, so Larry is very much just being like, well, if they leave, they're dead. And I feel like adult Aaron is really just kind of trusting that that's the case, just despite the fact that apparently neither of them who left are dead. So yeah, perhaps Larry needs to give some more credit for these 12-year-old paper girls, but also like, Aaron, you should start questioning your reality a little bit more. Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
Yeah, I think like if I'm Aaron, I'm really flipping out. And I mean, she is, like, we've seen her have like these moments of like, you're okay, you've got this, you know, like
you're gonna win. Yeah. It's all okay, because you're gonna win.
Yes. It is kind of relatable, though.
I mean, I don't ever believe that I'm going to win. So maybe I also need this to repeat to myself.
It's Wario or Waluigi who's like, I'm going to win.
Yeah, it's one of the two. It's a mirror.
Yep. But then we get my favorite transition of the entire episode.
Oh my god, this was so good. Mm-hmm. So this is when School's Out for Summer by Alice Cooper plays, and we get these like incredible slow motion shots of Mac and Dylan shooting fireworks at each other's heads, and then they do this like dramatic like lunge duck that is kind of like combined with a dab. Just so great. Like, their brother and sister dynamic is totally there. They're just being kids, except Dylan is, you know, kind of old. You know, just dancing, butt bumping, you know, doing chest bumps. Like, they're having fun in a way that Dylan hasn't been able to see his sister for 27 years. And Mac, you know, is now for the first time seeing her older brother as an old person. 40 whatever years that he is, instead of like 16, 17.
I think the show is doing a great job with this because the chemistry is there in a way where you believe that they're siblings. You believe that they have this shared history.
Totally. And
I think that by episode 4, we talked about this early on of, again, the show came out all at once, so maybe it's intended to be binged. And so when we do stop down, we maybe have critiques that are assuaged within the next couple of episodes. But we did say, like, Mac is pretty unlikable in the first two episodes, and we said, like, we really hope they give her some content that makes her more relatable, makes her more likable. And they could not have done a better job with episodes 3 and 4 with giving us that want.
Oh, where, 100%. Yeah.
Like, especially this one. But I loved seeing her hang out with her brother and him, like, basically teaching her the ways of the world in 2019, where she's like, all said, stop being a tight ass and buy me some smokes.
Oh my God. It was incredible. So after she asks him to buy her some smokes again, and he's like, no, I'm not gonna do that, she tells him that he's the one who got her hooked in the first place. And this was one of my favorite, like, out of nowhere lines. They were in Nugget's backyard, it was a Marlboro Red, and you punched me because I didn't inhale it right.
This sounds like such an older brother thing. Like, this sounds so
also
real.
I just love that their friend is named Nugget.
I feel like Nugget is a great dog name.
A corgi shaped like a chicken nugget.
I was feeling like, yeah, it has to be like a tan colored dog. Mm-hmm. So a corgi definitely fits that bill, especially because they're a little chunk. You know, they got nut nugget butt. I feel like that
nugget
works.
Nugget butt. Yes. Or like a golden doodle, like that meme where it's like, is this a dog or is this fried chicken?
Yes. Yes. I can see it. Uh-huh.
So after that really funny line, they actually have like a really important heart to heart where Dylan apologizes for being a dick to her. He had kids himself and grew up and realized how rough their childhood was, and, you know, says to Mac that a lot of the violence was unacceptable, and that's from their dad and also from Dylan. He takes culpability for that as well. And he apologizes to her for bullying her, which I thought was really touching.
I thought so too. I think that these could be really awkward conversations, right? Because even if Mac was the same or, like, you know, aged appropriately with Dylan here, it's still a rough conversation to have. But I feel like it is so obvious that Dylan is a dad now because he
has processed his trauma.
Yeah, he thinks about things in terms of, oh my gosh, I would never want my kids to go through that. And so I love that he apologizes and that he's had such growth since. I think Mac dying changed everything for him. And this is when we get some of the like 2019 education for Mac.
Yeah, here are all the things you can't say, and here are all the things you can say, which to me reminded me of the scene in Barry season 3 where Gene Cousineau's agent, played by Fred Melamed, lists off all the insults that Gene has been called over the years. Mm-hmm. So we can't really say these uncensored.
There's a lot of them.
But yeah, I think my favorite one was F-knuckle.
I was going to say that's one of my favorites, too. Obviously, Mother Effer is a classic.
A classic, yes.
Yeah, an oldie but a goodie. Mm-hmm. And I love when she just combines them all and, mm-hmm. and calls him a good mixture of them.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. and she's like, oh, yeah, I can still say these because you told me I can say them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say them to your face. So Mac asks Dylan about their dad, and Dylan says that he and their dad don't really talk anymore. And Mac asks about Alice, because notably Dylan did name one of his daughters Alice.
Yeah.
This was really meaningful too. So once Mac was diagnosed with cancer, Alice never left her side. And afterward, she was the only one there for Dylan too. And he mm-hmm. says, this is finally his chance to be there for Mac. This yeah. just like broke my heart into, I mean, we have not met Alice yet, but like, my God, what a woman. Like,
yeah,
I'm glad that somebody stepped up for these children.
Me too. And I think it just, because Mac doesn't get it. Like, she never really liked Alice, right? But like, yeah. I think in times of stress, in times of strife, it gives people the opportunity to step up in very meaningful ways. And to like, Mac has no idea all of what Dylan went through while she was sick and after she died and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it really three-dimensionalizes Dylan and their whole family in such a strong way. And I just felt I loved this scene and the later scene we get with Dylan and Mac. I just think it's such strong performances on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's so believable that they're siblings, despite the ridiculous. It's all very ridiculous, right? Like, fully, she's 12 yes. and he's like in his 40s or whatever. Yes, like,
yeah,
it's all very ridiculous, but it's very meaningful. And I loved hearing that one of his daughters was named Alice. It's very yes. sweet.
Yeah. I very much want to give this actor mad props. Cliff Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him in anything before. Apparently he was in Arrow, but yeah, I just he was in Homeland too. I guess apparently I have seen him in something. oops. So yeah, I mean, he just does a fantastic job here, just really emotive, and mm-hmm. It's just like a really nice contrast to Mac, where it's so clear that he has grown up like literally and metaphorically and has processed his trauma and is a better person to the rest of the world because of that. Mm-hmm. And I love that he's also, you know, trying to impart these lessons on Mac so that she can be a better person towards the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think it's a, and I love, like, he realizes I can fix things now. Like, this is my chance. Like, this is my mm-hmm. chance to really fix my relationship with my sister.
Yes. This is a man who has listened to the Hamilton soundtrack and has decided he's not going to give up his shot.
Definitely.
Do you think he listens to it while snow blowing like you do?
I definitely think so. He looks like a man who listens to Hamilton while he snow blows, or he might have someone who snow blows for him because he's a little rich.
Yeah. You know, he might have like the neighbor boy pay $15.
I feel like that was always the thing back in the day. But my like anxiety ridden heart is like, what if they hurt themselves on my property and then I get sued for it?
Yeah. Like, this, I can see how this is how you ended up in insurance.
I mean, it's probably the other way around, where like working in insurance is what gave me all the anxiety.
Or maybe it's just all internal to you and core yeah. to your personality. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
You invent a time machine and can go back to 1999. And yes.
And then I realize it was anxiety all along.
Mm-hmm. It's anxiety all along. Bum, 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 ba dum, bum.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. So we're back with the robot crew back on the farm. And apparently the robot has synced to old Aaron's equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And so Larry says that the most important thing is to keep them upright and that the rest of it is basically on autopilot. And so I like fully don't understand how this is the case where like the robot is just going to run around, but Aaron just somehow needs to like hold her core steady. It's like, hold the corset? Do you keep them upright? How does that work? I don't know. I'm looking forward to the next episode. But
I don't really get it either. I assume we'll just kind of see it happening. But I do love the her messing with the fingers.
Oh, really fun. Yeah. So he tells her to like put her hand in this like glove thing, which she then realizes like controls the robot's fingers. And Larry says something rude that I don't even remember. And Aaron like uses the robot glove finger to like flip him off from the robot.
It's so great. Is this also when she says like, oh, my gosh, like, wait, it's saying something about missiles.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It's saying I armed the missile. Yeah,
I loved that. I was like, oh my gosh, adult Erin has jokes, because she's been pretty serious for the last couple of episodes.
She does. She's also, as we know, trying to touch buttons, which is a bad idea. So no. Larry is just like, Jesus Christ, I cannot believe that the pilot of this ship is this like idiot.
And these 12-year-old girls.
Yeah, and like, the 12-year-old girls. Working with. Right? Like,
I lost Heck and Aldo, and I'm stuck with you all.
Like, what have I done to deserve this?
Yeah.
But Missy calls, adult Missy, after Aaron stood her up at the realtor's office. And Missy is in Aaron's living room. She sees all the, like, slumber party sleep bags and blankets. Mm-hmm. And she says, like, where are you? I'll come right there. And Aaron just is like, oh, Larry probably wouldn't like that. Like, what mm-hmm. the hell, Aaron? Like, pick up a little faster here. Come on.
Yeah. You need to be a better liar. Yes. Aaron. You're not so good at it.
Not so good. I mean, I'm terrible. So like I'm one to talk, but I think I could do a better job of this.
Yeah. I mean, Missy, I think immediately catches on to her sister's lies, like just the tone in her voice. And she's looking at young Aaron's bloodstained t-shirt.
Yeah. Bloody t-shirts.
Yeah. And she's just like, you know what? You better tell me where you are. I'm going to call the cops.
Yep. I mean, reasonable. Missy has her shit together, and Aaron does not seem to have as much shit together. So then we switch to a scene where Donna Metcalf, the social worker from the hospital last mm-hmm. week, is in a pedicure chair with an aggressive massage function.
I did notice this on my second watch, and I was like, you know what? Half the reason I go get pedicures is because of the massage chairs, because they're exactly like this one.
Oh my God.
I want someone to be punching me in the back. Like I put it on the hardest setting, like for the longest amount of time, and the one that goes up and down my back. Yeah.
That seems really bad for your nerves. But yeah, I mean, she's like literally being rocked back and forth by this massage chair. Like she seems totally incapable to hold her core steady and hold herself upright.
I know the actress must have been very distracted.
Yes. Yes. She has also put in some real work. Donna Metcalf, played by Jacqueline Williams. Mm-hmm. Good core work. Jacqueline. And so she is being questioned by the lady in white / Karen / Larissa about Mac's incomplete file, because as we know last episode, she saw the, you know, the stuff in the system at the hospital. And
yes,
she is of course still wearing this really terrible wig. And she has Donna. It's so bad. It's so bad.
They're so distracting.
I know. I can't.
Just girl, like, rock the short hair. You look
like,
great.
Flip it up like a pixie or something. Even maybe like the mushroom cut is doing her no favor.
It literally looks like someone just like slapped a wig on her and shoved her out the dressing room door. Like here you go.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, on her way out the dressing room door, she has Donna call the hospital and ask for info on Dr. Coyle, which is Dylan. Right. So, yeah, she is hot on the tracks for the little girls, and it is not good. She is so menacing. Like, this might be one of the scariest, like, TV villains I've seen in some time.
Yeah, they do a really good job of making her fairly menacing. I think that, like, I'm really enjoying that. Despite the fact that it feels like she's on kind of her own separate storyline, they do intertwine them quite a bit. So it's nice to see, like, she's very close. Like, it is, she is super close to catching them.
For sure. Yeah. She, the show does a really good job of, interspersing scenes.
Mm-hmm.
it does make it a little bit annoying to podcast because you're like, okay, and we're back with these people and we're back with those people and we're back with these people.
Let me tell you, another show I'm covering is even worse about it. Pretty Little Liars, because there's so many teens.
We're constantly
jumping from scene to scene to scene to scene. And I'm just like, it's too much. It's too much.
Oh no. Too many cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Aye, aye, aye. So, yeah, we're back with adult Erin giving herself affirmations in the mirror that she's going to win. And 12-year-old Erin approaches her, and she's just like an excited little girl that Missy is coming to the house.
Yeah, she really wants to see her sister. And I don't blame her. Like, of course, she'd be curious to see what an older version of her sister looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really blame her, but you feel bad. And I think the actress who plays young Missy that plays young Erin does a really good job of like seeming very naive and then having adult Erin play off of that and trying to like temper her expectations.
Yeah.
Is really great.
Yeah. So now that the show is like out there in the universe, all the like IMDb pages are filled out. So yes, Riley Nalette. I probably said some of that wrong. Riley doing great work here. She's, I love Erin, and I think a lot of it is because of how good Riley is.
Mm-hmm.
Missy got pilot training from the military. No, scratch that, reverse it. So when young Erin approaches, she and older Erin, so both of the Erins are having a conversation about what Missy's like these days. And older Erin tells younger Erin that Missy got pilot training from the military. She's not a doctor, but she now flies helicopters for a living. And like, I think that's really freaking baller.
Yeah. And this is also directly from the comic that Missy is a pilot. And it's one of the things that like you first find out where like Erin, obviously in the comic, she works for the Cleveland Preserver. And so she doesn't have an exciting job like Missy. Missy has like this really cool, interesting job.
Oh, she's not a patent law paralegal in the comic?
No, she works for she's like a reporter, but like a... Not like a well-known reporter or anything.
So the reason that she's a patent law paralegal is literally just so that they could explain around the lack of Apple logo on the device.
Probably.
Oh, wow. Sometimes I just really imagine like what it's like to be in the writer's room for some of these calls and.
Yeah. How they made these decisions.
Yep. Like, well, what if?
Yeah.
What if she's a paralegal? For a patent lawyer. So she flies helicopters for a living, and adult Erin tells young Erin that like Missy can't see her. You know, I mean, it's crazy enough for like Erin to be there with all of the children and the younger version of Erin, but like they don't need to bring Missy on this. But, like, honestly, I think they should, because if she's a freaking pilot and she flies helicopters for a living, maybe she can help adult Erin fly the giant robot.
Exactly. And I think there's only so many adults in this universe that you're comfortable letting in on this, like, secret, if you will.
Yes.
And I feel like it makes so much sense to bring in Missy on this, because despite the fact that maybe you don't have the best relationship, she's still your sister. And so even though it's very far-fetched and out there, when you show her kind of the proof, which you have a lot of at this point, you have the giant robot, you have the little device.
You have younger Erin.
Exactly.
Also, I think is the biggest proof.
Of course, yeah. So
Missy is definitely going to recognize.
Right.
So Erin is just excited that adult Erin and Missy are going to have a chance to fix their relationship. But adult Erin tells younger Erin, you can't erase 20 years of resentment in one afternoon. Ouch.
Yeah.
That is muy ouch.
I think it's rough, right? Part of me is like, oh gosh, adult Erin is being really blunt and upfront with a 12-year-old who like may struggle to understand this. But I do think she has to warn Erin about what she might hear, or you know what I mean? Like, I think she knows, like, 12-year-old Erin is probably gonna want to spy on this conversation. And so I think you do have to warn her that, like, it's not gonna be rainbows and sunshine, like you might think it might be.
Yeah, it's it could be rough. But so Aaron is gonna hide while adult Aaron and Missy have their conversation. But first we flash back to Tiffany approaching Mr. Larry. And Mr. Larry randomly is holding bongos, and it is acknowledged in the show, and I have no idea why that's relevant, but I can't wait for bongos to at some point become relevant.
I really want to see Larry play the bongos.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, he could have been just packing shit up and not have her acknowledge that he had bongos in his hand. Mm-hmm. Like, why? Why is he holding bongos? And why is that part of the show? Why is that canon?
It's necessary.
Why? I need to know why.
It's just a fun little anecdote. I don't know. Does Larry look like the type that would play bongos?
Yes. He's a white man.
That's all it takes. Are you a white man? You look like you can play bongos.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that is, you know, predominantly the people in America playing bongos.
Mm-hmm.
And so she shows him a diagram that she made of the morning that they left 1988 with times and locations and every interaction with STFU. I can't not laugh.
I know. Why did they do that to us? Like, you know what you did.
They could have literally done anything else, any other acronym. Yeah, you know what you did, Brian K. Vaughn.
Yeah. And again, I like that this, we get a character note for Tiffany in showing obviously how smart she is, but also it's kind of a little bit more information dump for us in terms of, okay, when everything froze and the sky turned pink, that is when the old watch is wiping people's mind and quote unquote fixing things. Yes. And it has a term associated with it called ablution.
Yeah. And Tiffany is like, oh my God, ablution. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Larry, Tiffany is very into this.
Larry's like, no, it's not cool. But Tiffany asks a very important question again, following with the logic of like, why weren't their minds wiped? Yeah. And so Larry says they somehow avoided a light-based capture beam, and the actual mind wiping happens on a control ship, command ship.
Right. So they somehow avoided this. That's like what we know at this point, is somehow they avoided their minds being wiped like everyone else's were.
All right. And then so next up, we switch back to KJ, who is telling Aaron, and they're like upstairs hiding away, that like, you cannot mess this up for Missy too. And Aaron asks KJ a very important question of like, why have you never mentioned seeing your adult self? And KJ doesn't really care. And she says, if my mom got her way, I turned out the way she wanted me to, and then I don't need to see that.
Yeah. I love that each girl kind of has their own perspective on seeing an older version, right? So like
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style. They exactly each have a different perspective.
Exactly. So Mac wasn't even looking for herself. She was looking for her brother, and then inadvertently finds out that she's dead. Aaron basically stumbles upon herself. We have KJ, who isn't interested in finding herself, and I love this as a character beat for KJ, where she's just like, I don't want to see what I turned into because I'm afraid that I listened to my mother and I became exactly who she wanted me to be, which maybe isn't who I want to be.
Right. Exactly.
And I just think KJ is, I know she's been like one of your faves the whole time, but I think she's really grown on me throughout the context of the show, because I think they're doing a really great job at having a very wide range of different types of childhoods on the show, and having a character who doesn't fit the picture of what her parents want her to be.
Relatable.
Yes. Like, she doesn't want to wear this dress that her parents want her to wear. Not only that, but she feels like an outcast, partly because she's Jewish, partly, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, I love that. And I think that KJ is such an interesting character that we don't see all the time on these types of shows, where she's
also just
loyal.
Really love how like emotionally mature and just like really empathetic she is.
Yeah,
She is so caring about her fellow paper girls. And actually, we got some feedback from one of our friends, Taylor, about how really great it is to see KJ truly caring about her friends, which is these girls that she just met, she's so protective of. And I love this about KJ. Like, she's like, I literally just met you, but I am freaking ride or die with y'all.
Yeah, yeah. I think it works a little better in the context of the comic book where all the girls but Erin know each other very well. But I do think the translation from comic to show to grasp each character, they're doing such a great job of exemplifying who these characters are, and especially KJ, I think.
I mean, I love the concept that, like, KJ is ride or die for her friends that she knows, but I think I love it even more that she's just like, no, I just met you, but we're ride or die.
Yeah. And she's just like, I don't care. Like, I have to go find Mac. And so she's like, I use the method that Older you told us on the, you know, on the web, and they have maps on there. I found Mac's brother's address.
So great. I mean, like, I mean, when everybody was just using, like, map books and atlases in their cars.
Yeah.
To find out then that, like, Google Maps and MapQuest exist. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny.
So great. And then so we flash back to Mac and Dylan, who are waiting at private school pickup for Dylan's kids. They go to some place called Buttonwood.
That does sound like a fancy place.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, just the name itself, you know, this is a fancy ass school.
Yeah. And so Dylan's going through what his plan is, and he's planning on, like, okay, we'll talk to my wife, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that, and then we'll adopt you. And of course, Mac is like, this is weird. Like,
man,
you're my
that's
brother.
Weird. Yeah. The way that she said that was also just so great.
Yeah. And he, because he basically wants to turn things around. He wants to give her the life she never was able to have. And he has money, he has family, he has a good life. And he can, he could share that with her. And this is very funny when she meets her nieces, I guess.
Yeah, technically her nieces.
Wilder is, I don't know why, like, did they, I don't think they explained the name Wilder.
They did not. They only explained her sister's name being Alice.
Yeah, and so she is, of course, like, a snotty teen girl. She's just like, oh my god, you're wearing my jacket.
Yeah. Wilder is a little bit holier than thou.
Yeah.
And this does not go over well with Mac.
No, because Mac is not gonna take crap from anybody. And I also, but on the exact opposite side of the coin, I really, really loved Alice, like, oh, shaking hands with
so
Mac.
Genuine. Love that she put her hand out to like do a handshake. I am a hug person. I am not a handshake person, especially if I'm meeting like family for the first time. I don't know that I would go with a handshake.
I don't know that I would go with either. Like, I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would hug right
away.
Are
you an awkwardly stand and wave?
I think I am the awkward stand and wave. Yeah, I think that's the move. I will hug like family members.
In the time of COVID, I can respect it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know where your germs have been. Like, I don't need to be. I don't need to be about that. But yeah. So this was very funny when they all meet, and so then I love her brother like flicking Mac in the head to get back in the car.
You little dweeb.
It was so cute.
Yes. And then we go back to Missy and adult Erin and Larry. And Larry and Erin are doing like literally the most terrible, awkward job pretending to be in a relationship. Literally any two people could do better than Larry and Erin at this.
It's so good though. Again, because like it's really funny. The show, I like when they infuse comedy into it. And I do think when you have an actress like Ali Wong, you really have to give her the moment to shine with her comedy chops as well. And so seeing her and Larry try to pretend they're in a relationship, I full on laughed out loud when they go to like kiss each other or kisses her like a head. It's so weird.
Larry is literally the worst at this. I mean,
yeah,
he fully just like, yeah, she goes to kiss him and he's like, oh yeah, no, here's a cheek kiss. But then she's like confused by it and like kind of like turns her head a little bit. And then Larry, yeah, like kisses her forehead in a really awkward way.
Yeah, it's so funny though. And Missy, you could tell, is like not really buying any of this, or at the very least, she's super confused about all of this. And then of course they hear the motorbike because KJ has stolen it, which was very funny. I did not know this was going to happen when I asked you if you noticed they lingered on the shot of the motorbike. Yes. I thought it had something to do with the license plate because I feel like Lost trained us to look for numbers. And I'm like, maybe that means something.
Oh my God. Jess has me like hyper focused on writing down like every freaking random number in this show because she keeps being like, do you think that's gonna mean anything? And I feel like I'm just running around with Robin from the rehearsal after Jess, who's just like, oh, this number could mean something, this number could mean something. And I'm just like writing down all these random details that are never gonna come into this show being relevant.
Yeah,
I'm never gonna forget Lou and Joe Kale.
Yeah. This is so good. And and so he immediately like gets up to see what's up and he goes, oh, it was nice to meet you, Misty. And he like gets her name wrong.
He also like, yeah, he goes outside and then he's just screaming.
Yeah, these are teenagers. Bruh.
Yeah. It's great. And yeah, like Missy is like, what the hell is going on? Is he taking your money? Which like not great, number one. And then are you still taking your meds? Not great, number two.
No, all not great at all. Aaron is watching all of this. Young Aaron is watching all of this. And the worst timing. Like,
oh my God, this was heartbreaking.
It was. So Aaron gets her period for the first time in this moment. And she has to go out there to ask adult Aaron for help. And I'm just like, God, the twistedness of having to ask the adult version of yourself how to do this, like how to put a tampon in. Like, oh my God, no.
I know. It's so sad because she never gets to actually ask her, you know, adult self for help because she's just like, I need your help. And adult Aaron is like, no, you can't be seen.
Yeah,
like,
she, what if Missy comes back? Her. And she and Missy does come back.
Yeah.
Gets her purse.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's rough. I mean, like, we've all been there where you get your period and you don't have anything for it. But like the first time is a lot worse than any other time because you don't know what's happening.
Yeah, it's depending on the level of education that you've received and like how much know-how you had going into it. It may or may not come as a surprise or
Aaron is the older sister, Missy is her younger sister. Yeah.
At least, yeah, the perks of having an older sister is at least hopefully you'd think that they would walk you through a little bit of it. But it's really sad. And then we get like, gosh, this episode really is kind of a gut punch the more I think about it with all these conversations. Like
very many gut punches.
Yeah, because like we have only heard adult Aaron's side where she has said Missy was not there for us when mom was sick. And yet we hear from Missy, she's like, you didn't have to go through it alone. I didn't ask you to be the martyr. You could have called me. But adult Aaron's like, oh, I didn't want to bother you. You have like a family. You have a really good job. Like, I didn't want to bother you. But it's we get this line from Missy that broke my heart.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this broke me.
Yeah. She says, thank you, Aaron, for robbing me of a relationship with my mother in her final years. How can I ever repay you? And it's
so, so tough.
It's so tough because I think you can so see it from both sides. And when you don't have great communication with your sibling, which a lot of us don't have, because there's just this, there's a history there, right? Mm-hmm. And it may or may not be a good history. And so when, you know, Missy thinks, oh, Aaron won't even let me go see my mom. Like, she's taking on all of this and won't let me help. And Aaron is thinking, gosh, Missy's too busy with her own great life to, I'm the one who has to do all of this because I'm the older sibling.
Yeah, I think the moral of this story is always ask. Don't assume.
Yep. You know what they say about assuming.
I do know what they say about assuming. And if you don't, just Google it or just like look at the word. You'll figure it out.
Yes. But this scene was really awful because obviously then like obviously it's very emotionally charged. But then younger Aaron is seeing all of this as well.
Yeah, that was rough. Mm-hmm. I don't think younger Aaron is like emotionally equipped for this level of conversation.
No. But yeah. And then Tiffany being the boss that she is like, hey, I'm gonna hang out in a robot.
Yeah. Tiffany's trying to do things, trying to make money moves. And then Larry like finds her in the robot and he's like, oh, of course you're not where you're supposed to be. Like, where's your little friend? She's probably dead. You know that, right?
But she's 12. Leave her alone. She's also a super genius, Larry.
I know. But yeah, so this is when we find out that the old watch is like specifically trying to kill time travelers.
Right.
And Tiffany is just like saying this like really sad thing of like, nobody ever listens to me. But like, of course, I don't want any of them to die. Like, geez, yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, Tiffany, I think they've been listening to you. But like, yeah, this hurt. I felt this as a former 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, I think kids are often dismissed, especially at this really interesting age where they're preteens. They're not quite teenagers yet, but they're getting they're going through puberty, right? They're going through all these changes.
A lot is happening. Yeah,
there's a lot going on, and I think it's easy to dismiss kids of this age because you're like, oh, either it's hormonal and you don't know what you're talking about, or you're just a kid and you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until you're a lot older that people actually start taking you seriously. But Tiffany has a lot to offer, as we've seen.
Totally. She's amazing. Everybody mm-hmm. should listen to her all the time.
Yes.
And so Larry shows her the Radikowski Farmer's Almanac. good Lord, where that's Larry and his grandfather painstakingly kept everything about the weather on the farm. And yeah, he goes on this like honestly kind of a weird speech where like I fully still don't exactly understand why he says it was never about the corn.
Because I don't know for sure. But it sounds like he is insinuating that his grandfather knew this information okay. to be important.
Okay, right? Interesting.
Because the thing is, his grandfather made him keep this.
On the weather, though.
On the weather. But he says it was never about the corn, meaning like it was always about this. But I don't. It could just be that he thinks that and that's not true, or I could be misreading it.
I mean, is weather about the corn? I don't know. This like seemed very like I don't have enough farming expertise to like fully understand this. It was never about the corn statement. But essentially, writing about the weather prepared Larry to keep coordinates on when and where the foldings occur, which is the secret back roads of time travel. And he shows Tiffany this notebook and everything's in a code. But a big folding is coming in a few hours in the field. And Tiffany says it's like Larry was chosen and maybe she was chosen too.
Yeah. And again, there's a lot happening in this episode. It's like an emotionally charged episode, but also a lot of like lore dropping here. So we find out about these folds. That occur, and we get to see one in a little bit, and that is basically how you travel through time, is through these folds in time.
Yeah, and it looks like little swirlies, but not the little swirlies that we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Different little swirlies.
Yep, different swirls.
Mm-hmm. But before we get to the swirls, we have a couple more scenes first. So next we go back to KJ, and she's just like kind of lurking outside of Dylan's house like a total creeper, and his wife finds her and is like, oh, are you a friend of Joe's? She's at Chili's with her cousins. And I was like, yes, Chili's. I could go for a spicy chili chicken crisper right about now.
I know. I love how she's just like, oh, Kimberly. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Her friends call her Joe. That's right. Because obviously KJ looks so confused.
Yeah, she also does not know. But she's like, oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, come on. You can wait for her. And I love, because this is a bougie
home. Oh, my God, yes.
And she's like, can I make you some kale chips? And KJ is like, what the hell is a kale chip? Like,
what are kale chips?
I love that. And so then we get this moment where she's like, oh, you're her girlfriend, right? And of course, like, this is I think back in the day, even now, people would say that, like, oh, one of your friends is your girl. It's, oh, that's a bunch of girlfriends. Like, it's not meaning romantic entanglement, but that is certainly how KJ takes it.
Yeah, I still don't love it. I prefer to say gal pals.
I just say friends. I don't think I put that genders too. On it anyway.
But if I'm specifically referring to a group gal of pals. My women who are my friends, I like to say gal pals rather than girlfriends.
I think gal pals more fun just because it rhymes.
Always rhymes are more fun.
Yeah, if I have an option to rhyme or not rhyme, I'm definitely choosing to rhyme.
Always. Mm-hmm. Also always choosing to pun.
Oh my God, yes.
Yes. But before we get off the topic, Jess, what is your Chili's order?
Oh, yes. Okay. I am a big fan of, I like to do this sometimes at places where instead of getting an entree, I will get an appetizer as my meal.
Yes.
And I love the triple dipper, baby. My Chili's order is a triple dipper. I really love the Southwestern egg rolls. I also, if I'm going to get an entree, I do like the chicken crisper things.
The chicken crispers are honestly like, I have not been to Chili's in a very long time, but I remember the chicken crispers at Chili's, like absolutely slapping. And
they're really good. They're like, because they're nice and crunchy. And the, is it like honey chipotle or something? I'm trying to remember the flavoring on
like
them.
Sweet
really
and
good.
Spicy. Yeah. Yes. Like in the scheme of this breed of restaurants of like Chili's, Applebee's, TGI Fridays, Outback, I think Chili's has the best chicken tenders.
I probably would agree with that. I don't know that I've had a lot of chicken tenders at Applebee's.
Oh,
we don't have an
Outback.
Literally
will not go to, you could not pay me to go to an Applebee's these days.
I don't know. The thing is like,
sorry, Karishma. I know it's your favorite sit down restaurant.
Applebee's is fine. Like, that's the thing. It's fine. But like, I'll go there like once a year, maybe. And that is like pushing it, like once every other year. And it's because it's like, we might as well, you know, it's nothing, everything I'm like, you know, wanting or craving. I'm not really craving anything like that. You know,
I haven't been to an Applebee's since I was like 7 years old and we were on a road trip. But I also, you know, live in an urban area and have like many restaurants available.
Oh yeah. If I'm choosing hole in the wall, random place, mom and pop style restaurant or Applebee's, like, come on now. Come on. Like,
come on.
Yeah, come on.
Do you like kale chips?
I don't think I've ever had a kale chip. I'm not a big fan of kale. So probably not.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I am not entirely in love with kale chips. I love kale, but I don't love the chips.
It just feels like you're trying to like make something that is naturally unhealthy out of something that's healthy. And it's just like, but why do we need to do this?
Well, they're not fried usually. They're like baked.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
you're like, oh, these are chips. And I'm like, they're not though.
Yeah. So yeah. KJ also like takes a bite out of what looks like some jicama and is like, nope, this isn't for me.
Yeah. I don't blame her.
Yeah. But then the doorbell rings and it's the lady in white and she's calling herself Larissa this time.
Yeah.
And she's
but
like,
no wig.
Yeah. No wig. She homegirl is like on the move. She don't have time for a wig.
She is always dressed for the occasion. She knows. She's like, oh, OK, this woman, white suburbia. I got to wear leggings. I got to wear like a
yoga
outfit. No wig this time. And she's brought over some
gluten-free,
dairy-free, salted caramel blondies.
I mean, even though they're gluten-free and dairy-free, they still sound like something I would absolutely house.
She's just like, I think the thing is she knows where she is and when she is. And she's like, okay, it's 2019. I'm in suburbia. I'm in like the white suburban area.
Suburb of Cleveland.
I got to do the gluten-free, dairy-free, or they're not going to let me in the house.
Yeah, totally. She also like it goes through this like really funny little spiel where she's like, oh, my husband and I just bought the tan colonial on the corner. We're making the rounds to apologize for our two very loud dogs. Do you want some salted caramel blondies? They're gluten-free and dairy-free.
Yeah. She has this script down. Like, she is prepared.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then she's like, can I use your bathroom? Which, like,
this is a little awkward. So awkward.
Like, oh, my house is just around the corner, but, like, can I use your bathroom?
It's like that much of an emergency, man. Like,
I mean, if it is, then like, yes, like ask to use my bathroom. But like, if it's not, like your house is right there, lady.
That's what I'm saying. And you're in athleisure, go run.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know you, stranger.
Again, there are some, you know, illnesses that can make
I'm not. Yeah. For me, it's more of just like, I'm not even answering Larissa's doorbell ring. Like, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no, I don't answer. I have a video doorbell and I do not open the door if it's not.
You could be trying to murder me is always my default.
I live by myself and my dog loves strangers. He's not going to protect me from nobody.
Oh, Winston, my dog Winston, absolutely 0%. He's attacking anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Murphy has been attacking the microphone cord during this entire podcast recording situation, but I don't think he would attack somebody at our door. He would probably eat a dairy-free salted caramel blondie.
I mean, yeah, he could eat one of those, I guess.
Yeah, if offered, he would absolutely eat it.
Yeah. So this is when Larissa, or quote unquote Larissa,
Karen/Larissa/Lady in White, while she's walking in to use this random lady's house and her bathroom, she sees the Walkman and notices like, this is not from this time period.
Yes.
And she sees KJ getting away on the little motorbike, and then she like full on chokes Dylan's wife.
One-handed, like, shoves her up against the wall, and she's like, where's she going? You better tell me now. Mm-hmm. I love her impressions of her.
I mean, we'll do anything here on this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, so then we go to Chili's, basically pending doom that we know that Larissa/Karen/Lady in White is headed there. And Wilder is like super rude and elitist about Chili's and like, listen, you can be as rich as can be, but Chili's is good. They make very good chicken crispers. I will die on this hill. Forget about you, Wilder.
I just think Wilder, Wilder is super uptight, super like holier than thou, better than this.
She's a but little at the bitch. Same
time, at the same time, she's just like, imagine how much food they waste.
I mean, she's like, not wrong there.
No. I'm like, not saying she's wrong about that, but like, do something about it then, Wilder. Like, don't, you know? And Mac is just like immediately annoyed by her, which can't blame Mac because Mac is like, you have it so good. Like, calm down, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Wilder apparently is ice skating and has, you know, mastered her sit spin. And Mac is just like really upset by her behavior and really upset by Dylan supporting her and like doing a little handshake with her. And Mac, you know, needs to get pulled aside. And Dylan and her go over to little Chili's vestibule. And Mac thinks she's just standing up for herself, but Dylan is trying to protect his own kids, too. And Mac says, it's like you got rich, you had a family, and now you're ashamed of me. And you want me to feel bad about myself, too. Well, guess what? I don't. I like who I am. I was like, yes, girl.
Yeah. And I totally feel how she could feel this because on one hand, because she even says to the kids, she's like, oh, well, we went and played with a bunch of illegal fireworks, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, it's Dr. says, Dildo over here.
Yeah, Dr. Dildo. That's right. She says it to the kids, and she has that version of Dylan, who is the child, the Dylan she remembers from, like, a day ago. And then she has this older Dylan who is rich and eats weird foods and lives in a richy rich house and has these two preppy private school kids. And so the images don't match up. These puzzle pieces do not fit together. And so she feels like she doesn't fit in his life anymore. She mm-hmm. doesn't, she thinks that he is like, cause when she says all the words that she would normally say around him when she was 12, he's like, you cannot talk like that in front of my kids. And she doesn't get it because for her, no time has passed.
Yeah. And, you know, she doesn't get that, like, growing up happens. And Dylan, you know, tells her, like, I'm still the old me, Mac, but now I'm this me too. And, like, this is just so relatable. Like, you grow up and things might change and you might change, but it's okay because, like, your loved ones are still your loved ones. And he tells her, like, I'm definitely not ashamed about you. I love you. And we're going to figure it out because this second chance is something that not a lot of people get and we're not going to waste it.
Yeah. Yep. And, mm-hmm. and so this is when, like, just at this time is when KJ comes in. And so Dylan goes back to the table with the kids.
Oh, yeah. But before he goes back, so Mac tells him, I got to use the John. And he has, like, a perfectly brother statement. It's like, don't fall in.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And there's also, like, a dad statement, too. Yes, like, yes. It's kind of both.
Totally.
So, yeah. So KJ gets there. And she's like, we have to leave. We have to go back to 1988. And Mac doesn't want to, but KJ is like, the lady in wait is, she's catching up to us. She was at, you know, your brother's house. She's probably on her way here. And so Mac knows, like, I can't risk my brother's life here. Yeah. Yeah. She can't stay here, even though she's probably gonna die if she goes mm-hmm. back to where 1988. And so she leaves with KJ. And we see them kind of take off on the motorbike. And then freaking Lady in White is in Chili's looking around.
She books it out of there. And this is Jess's favorite moment of the episode, which got many a hilarious text.
Yeah, because
she full-on bodies a busboy for absolutely no reason.
You have to rewatch the scene, please. I beg every listener to just go back and watch the scene
it's
again.
It's absolutely
because,
worth it.
Like, she sees him take off on the motorbike and she's heading towards the exit. The thing is, there's a busboy just standing by, like, the counter there. She has a full 6 feet. A full human could lay down in between the busboy and the wall.
There's a lot of room. There's a lot of clearance.
Yeah. Instead of, I don't know, scooting around him or running around him, she just body checks him and he just drops all the dishes. And then she shoves another lady out of the way on her way out. And I was like,
so good.
Up with this. I've seen this scene like 5 times because there's so much space, but she does not care.
She's just like, no, everybody in front of me is being taken down. And it doesn't matter whether you were actually in front of me or not, whether you're in my way or not, you're going down and you're going down right now.
It was so great. Like, I rewound this. I couldn't even tell you how many times. Like, I marked down the time code 3830. If you mm-hmm. want to rewatch this scene, that's where you need to go. It is so ridiculously funny, and I think we all needed that moment.
Yeah,
because we're about, like, to have our hearts shattered.
It, you're probably not going to see it.
Yeah, you need to go rewatch it. I promise you, it's worth it, everyone.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth it, everyone, and it's worth it every single time.
Yes, and we needed this moment because we're about to get our little hearts broken when we watch just this again. This is my favorite moment, that not the busboy situation, although that is my favorite funny moment. Yes. My favorite real moment of the show thus far is this long shot of KJ driving the motorbike without a helmet, which makes my heart, like, beat too fast. Yeah. But
we know you work in insurance. No, okay,
wear helmets. I mean, even in general, just wear a helmet. It's safe.
I mean, yes, absolutely wear a helmet. Yeah, it's, you know,
but
it's
she's
the least you can do to protect yourself.
Yeah, protect your noggin. There's a lot of important things happening up there. And so KJ's just, like, driving this motorbike, and Mac is on the back, and she's, like, hugging onto KJ. And I was so impressed with this actress, like, the range of emotion, and, like, you can literally watch her face change as they continue driving.
Her face just falls and she's just, like, absolutely having a breakdown.
Yeah. Sophia Rosinski.
So beautiful.
I just wanted to shout out the actress, Sophia Rosinski.
Yes. The only person who had a Wikipedia page before this show. It was not particularly thorough.
But it's like, I thought this was so perfect for the character because she can't help it, but also it's God. Okay. Let me talk it over. Like, she is someone who it puts up this guard, right? Like, she has this wall up all around her and she keeps people at very much a distance. She makes fun of people. She calls people names. It's all very much an outer shell to protect herself. She's wearing armor and she is having this moment where, yeah, she's holding on to KJ to stay on the motorbike, but you can also look at it as hugging. And so she's hugging someone. She definitely
hugs in a little tighter.
Yeah, she hugs someone without it actually being a hug or seen as a hug. And the only time she can really show all of this emotion that she's feeling is when no one's looking at her. Like, she has this very private moment, even though I think
KJ
could tell,
definitely
right?
notices. She,
cause
like,
you see her head. Yeah. Kind of turn around,
but she's so stoic. Like, she's just riding Mac to safety and she's just letting her feel all the feels. And she's like, this is what matters. I'm just going to drive because I'm a total badass and I'm going to get us both to safety. And I'm really sorry you're going through it. I love you. But we're driving right now.
Yeah. And I think this is both a perfect encapsulation of who KJ is and who Mac is, because KJ is the strong, silent, loyal friend who will get you to safety. And Mac is the person who cannot show emotion in front of others. And it takes her to this point, to this breaking point where she is leaving her brother behind to actually break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was good. The cinematography of this scene was just
the score,
absolutely spectacular. Yeah. I loved it so much. But we have one more scene because back at the farm, older Aaron, sorry. I don't know older Larry yet. I don't really want to meet him.
Maybe we get to see him play the bongos.
Oh my God. That would make my life complete. Okay. So older Aaron tells Larry that they can't just leave the other two girls behind. And they have a really important conversation about the dangers of war. Mm-hmm. And how, once you time travel, you're detectable by the old watch. And Larry and adult Aaron decide that they have to take the risk of the sacrificing themselves in order to protect the girls. Cause they're only 12.
Yeah.
And that is when the sky opens up in a big swirly zappy thing. And I thought that the folding looked like, do you remember those pink glass balls that they had at Spencer's that you put your hand on and the sparks touch your hand?
Oh, yes.
One. Yeah. So that apparently means it's time to go when the sky looks like a Spencer's ball. And apparently this is only going to be open for 10 minutes. So they got to go into that robot and they got to go now. But just like that, KJ and Mac arrive just in time. But the lady in white is hot on their tail and she hits the spikes that Larry activated last episode. But these spikes are literally right outside the house.
That's what I'm saying. Gets, you need to put the spikes way further back. I said this last episode.
Yes. I didn't realize how close they were to the house until just now. Not just now, a week and a half ago when I watched the episode for the first time. Yeah. She literally gets out of the car with her laser gun and is 10 feet in front of the house. Are those spikes for then?
Yeah. I guess they can't leave, but I don't want people on my property either.
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. And so she just gets out of the car, takes off running towards the silo with her laser gun, and the freaking giant robot just Kool-Aid mans itself out of the silo and starts running towards the folding. And this is when we get an absolutely hilarious shot of adult Aaron in the driver's seat in the head of the robot. And all the girls and Larry are just crowded around behind her. And this shot was so cliche, but I don't hate it. I'm so glad that they included this. It made me crack up.
Yeah. I think it's fun because if you are a fan of the comic book, obviously there's a lot. It's a sci-fi, right? It's sci-fi. So there's a lot of stuff that would cost them a lot to put into the show. And I'm glad that this part is something we got to see, because again, they're only going to be able, I don't know. I mean, it is Amazon, but I don't know how much what the budget is on this show. So I did enjoy the robot Kool-Aid manning it out of the silo. That was
great. My god, yes. I mean the robot could have like jumped through the ceiling too. That would have been great, but like yeah. Kool-Aid manning itself out of the silo was chef's kiss perfection.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so good. And then so the giant robot makes it into the folding and just like disappears into it. And the lady in white is pissed.
Yeah, she's furious.
She's so mad. She's so mad that she stands there until it's dark. They go in and it's like, you know, it's light out. It's like 6 p.m. in, you know, the spring where like it's not like, you know, 12 noon, but like it's the daytime. And then we get her still standing there in the dark. So like homegirl has literally just been like seething mad for hours and hours.
I'm like, you could have like at least tried to scope out the house to see if there was anything like, you know, worth finding.
Oh yeah.
There,
she should have gone to look for something.
But nope, she just had to wait for Jason Mantzoukas to show
up. Yes. Jason Mantzoukas shows up in a Tupac t-shirt with a giant beard and a giant fro. And he's just like whistling. And then he drops the classic line, "It's not that I'm mad, I'm just disappointed."
Yeah. Anybody who's a comic book fan knows who he's playing, knows what character he's playing. I will say I was not spoiled on this this casting choice. And the reveal was absolutely
so
brilliant.
I mean, he like starts off kind of like facing backwards and then turns around and it's Jason Mantzoukas and you're just like, yes.
Yeah, it's really great casting. I'm super excited because obviously he's hilarious. He's such a great comedic actor.
I love Jason Mantzoukas so much.
I think he's going to bring a really fun energy to the show. So I'm really excited. Yeah,
he always does. Jason Mantzoukas, if you're listening, come on our podcast because I know you have a podcast. So
can you imagine?
Do it. I mean, I would die.
I would die three times.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Chernus, amazing. Jason Mantzoukas, please outdo our friends on the Severance podcast.
I mean, I would why not? Yeah.
Please. And then so yeah, we get the end credit song, which I will say is a modern song from Beach House, which is a band from Baltimore that formed in 2004. So I thought it was interesting that it wasn't an 80s song.
Yeah, they don't exactly. They're not like sticking to just 80s or using like modern songs in the 2019 like section of the show.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that a lot of the show is actually taking place in 2019.
Well, I don't necessarily mind it. Like, I don't think we always need to. Right. Like Stranger Things is a show that like loves to do an 80s needle drop. But like, I don't necessarily need Paper Girls to do that, especially if like the budget isn't necessarily there. I'd rather them spend it elsewhere, especially because I'm
but
not
the needle
drops complain.
That they do have been excellent.
When we get schools out for summer, never going to hear me complaining because it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm never going to hear that song and not think about like Mac doing a little like duck dive out of the way
fireworks.
Of the firework. Yeah, at her face.
Yeah.
Should we get into some feedback?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, so our friend Josiah writes in, what would your 12-year-old selves think of you if they met you today? You want to go first?
I think the thing is, okay, so 12 years old, what grade is that? Is that like sixth grade?
Seventh grade, eighth grade. I mean, it depends on when your birthday is and like how old you were when you
I would say, that 12-year-old me.
I personally was in seventh grade when I was 12.
Yeah. I mean, sixth or seventh, I would say it's like pretty much the same in terms of what I was like. But I would say I'd be super jazzed that I have a dog.
Yes. I was going to say the same thing.
That'd be very exciting to 12-year-old me. I think I would be very disappointed with my choice of career, if I'm being honest, at 12 years old. Like, what even is insurance to a 12-year-old? But I think I would be like overall, I'd be like fairly happy. Yeah. I think I would be like, oh God, look at, she has like very big glasses. Like those are not in style.
Except 12-year-old Jess, they are in style.
I know. She doesn't know though. She doesn't know.
She doesn't know.
I also think I might be 12-year-old me might be surprised I don't have kids. Because I think like back then it was more of like more common for people to have kids in their like mid-20s. And now it's like, and this is you know, not that we need to get into my personal life, but it's not like I'm disappointed I don't have kids, but I think 12-year-old me would be surprised.
Like Aaron was.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, oh my gosh, how did your life become this way? Yeah. But what do you think? What would your 12-year-old
yeah,
self
I
say?
Mean, I think similar to Aaron, I think younger me would have been like, excuse me, you're 32. What's a podcast? yeah, explain a podcast to me, please. I think, you know, 12-year-old me would be not so pleased with the fact that I am not working right now. Mm-hmm. I think 12-year-old me, I mean, I did not want to work for the government when I was 12. So I think 12-year-old me would be like, interesting, you went and worked for the government.
Yeah.
I think 12-year-old me would be really excited that I have lived in different places all around the world.
Yeah.
12-year-old me would be really excited that I have my own dog and that he's so freaking cute.
Yeah.
I think 12-year-old me would be happy to that I have my own house.
Oh, yeah, me too. I think 12-year-old me would be pretty impressed with that. And yeah. I think 12-year-old me would be like, if I could explain what a podcast was to the yes. younger version of me, I think she'd be like, that's pretty cool because yeah. I talk
you
a
know,
lot.
Yeah, exactly. You know how like you listen on the radio to the morning show every morning when mom drives you to school? Well, guess what? You don't just have to listen at 8 a.m. every weekday. It's all the time on the internet yeah. for as many gigabytes as you can possibly fit on your phone.
Yeah, I think 12-year-old me would be very impressed with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also we have phones now in our pockets that hold things called gigabytes is a lot bigger than a megabyte.
Like, oh my gosh, you get to text and it doesn't cost you 10 cents every time. That's amazing.
Incredible. Yes.
Yeah, that was a great question though. Thank you.
Yes,
Josiah.
Thanks, Josiah. Yeah, I do think that 12-year-old me would be like, ew, you're not married, but like I am totally fine with that, being 32 and unmarried. Mm-hmm. It's a lot, especially given the state of our world the last couple of years, and mm-hmm. you yourself had to postpone your wedding and do all the COVID shenanigans for your wedding. I am just grateful I did not have to deal with that personally.
Yeah.
But 12-year-old me, I think, would be like, what's a COVID?
Yeah. No, I think there's something to say there though, where like what you expect your life to be when you're 12.
Totally. And that's why I think this show is so relatable. You're never how you thought you would be when you're 12. Because you're a child yeah. and you still have yeah. childish, you know, thoughts and behaviors and expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's super unrealistic. Sorry if you're 12 and listening to this podcast.
If you're 12, I'm so sorry.
I know. I'm really sorry. You're going to understand one day. Listen, if you're 12, ask your mom if you can reach out to us on Twitter and like we'll help mentor you through the difficulty of your teenage years and your yeah. young adult years. It'll be okay. It gets better.
Also, to be like the good news for 12-year-olds nowadays is if they got their periods, they could just Google and look up on YouTube like how totally. To deal with all of that.
Oh, yeah. I bet you if you like Googled like there's blood when I stood up. Bet you you'd get the answer like young Aaron did not get from adult Aaron.
So we also got some feedback from Taylor, who we recommended the show. So I'm just going to pat us on the back mm-hmm. a little bit.
Yes, so we recommended it to her. She immediately went and started it and then literally just binged it in a single evening. And then now is rewatching it for the podcast. So like, Taylor, we love you. Thank you for validating our recommendations. And we're really glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, so she's really loving it. She especially loved the Mac and Dylan reunion and just how wholesome it was. She says it's very refreshing, just because of the acceptance from Dylan and just the readiness to take her in and into his life and take care of her and save her and basically uproot his entire life for her. And she hasn't read the comic or anything or the graphic novel, but she also mentioned she loves KJ and Mac together, how KJ is so empathetic and caring about her friends. And she's just so protective of them. And just like the special connection they have. She also mentions the actual like part on the motorbike where she's trying to maneuver but not like blow up Mac's spot in that moment. And just Mac finally letting go and crying because of everything that's going on. Yeah, so that's, those are like the main hit points that she really loved from the episode. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of the relationship building of these girls as well. I think that's something that is really, they're doing an excellent job with, is just the character work on this show is fantastic.
Absolutely. And I really enjoy that we are, you know, continually getting just sort of like different pairing ups of the four. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are only so many iterations, but I think it's great that they're making sure to give a little bit of time to each of the pairs. It's really great to see, you know, none of these girls really being like left out. You know, in bigger groups that can sometimes happen, especially because these girls don't actually know each other. But yeah, I mean, it's really great. The writing is really fantastic. Loving the characterization from everybody, and cannot wait to hit play on episode 5 in approximately like 5 minutes after we hang up from this.
I know. I'm super excited to watch episode 5. It feels like it's been a very long time since we've been able to watch new Paper Girls content.
Yes. I watched this last episode 3 times because I took the notes literally over a week ago. So I take the notes on my second watch through.
Yeah.
And I needed a refresher today, because it's been so long.
Yeah, so we'll be back with episode 5 in just a few days, and episode 5 is entitled A New Period, which I think is fairly funny considering what happens.
Oh yeah. I had not seen that yet. I'm really pleased with that title.
It's really good. So if you want to talk a little bit more about this show with us, give us some feedback. You do that in a few different ways. You can email jess@postshowrecaps.com. of course, you could tag us in the Patreon Discord, postshowrecaps.com/Patreon, if you want to become a member. We also have merch now for Post Show Recaps.
We do. I just ordered mine yesterday. I can't wait. Shipping is not free, but it's worth it.
No. And postshowrecaps.com/store. If you are a patron at a certain level, you will get a discount on the merch. So another incentive to become a patron of Post Show Recaps. And if you, you could also send us feedback on Twitter. I am @TheJessSterling. I'm covering a whole bunch of stuff right now. I mentioned a little bit earlier, I'm covering Pretty Little Liars with Sarah Ferguson. Of course, I'm always covering Community with Josh Wiggler. And then over on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, we're talking Dawson's Creek, Boy Meets World, and some bonus content for the month of August. So go check me out there. Deidre, where can people find you? Where can they send feedback in?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter @DHLips. Also, you can find me on the Patreon Discord. If you find me in other places, feel free to reach out if that is your preferred method. I'm out there on the streets. But yeah, I mean, I would love to hear your Paper Girls takes, your feedback, your questions. We'll take it all, and we'll take it with aplomb.
Yes. So we will be back in just a couple of days with episode 5. I had an idea for how we could end the podcast, and now I've forgotten it, and I'm so upset with myself.
Please leave this part in the podcast.
Of course I'm gonna leave this in. I just can't remember what it is, and now I'm so sad.
Oh my god.
Maybe I'll think about it for next time.
Well, Jess and I are gonna go to Chili's and have some chicken chili crispers, but we're gonna get there on our motorbike. So we'll see you next week, folks.
Bye.
Bye.